Yeah, is it okay to change? I mean, it has changed, yeah.
Okay, so you will, now you're more of a quantum field theory side of versus engineering.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll mention the title after the introduction, then it will be more clear what's going on. Before saying anything about the title, I'd just like to recall what we've heard yesterday and what we've just learned from Aaron Lauder, and I'm trying to make a connection between these two things. So, recall that sort of the punchline of what I said yesterday was that surface, holonomy, or surface transport, parallel transport, in a two-bundle, or if you like, in a gerb, or if you like, in a bundle gerb, or if you like, using a Deligne co-cycle, or if you like, using a differential character, that all these things can be thought of as working like this. You start with some big surface here, whose parallel transport you'd like to compute, and what you do is you choose a dual triangulation. So what I'm describing is sort of that groupoid of paths in the transition groupoid. So you choose open patches, which give you a dual triangulation of your manifold. So you imagine a patch sitting here, a patch sitting here, a patch sitting here. You choose your dual triangulation, and then, as I described, you'll find all these jumps from one patch to another, which give you sort of these transition triangles. There are the faces of these tetrahedra that play the big role in the descent data. So you'll triangulate your manifold this way. You have certain data in here, which I didn't really explain in lots of detail. But what I did explain is that these triangles appear. There will be sort of transition functions associated to this edge, going from I to J, say, something going from J to K here, something going from I to K here. They will be filled by certain two morphisms, or this local data that you get by locally trivializing that two functor that we started with. So then you compose all this using your two categorical structure, and in the remaining faces, you fill in that local trivial transport. So you hit these faces here with your triv K, I guess in this case. It would be triv J sitting here. Right? You have all these trivial functors locally. They're glued together by these transitions. So for abelian gerbs, the formula you get out of this is known as the Gavetsky-Reis formula, I guess. They were the first people who actually wrote this down. But it generalizes to, you know, two transport taking values in whatever you want by that general procedure which I sketched yesterday. Just choose any I you like, and you get such a picture. So the sort of remarkable thing is that Aaron Lauder drew the same picture without talking about parallel two transport. So, maybe I can just draw it into the same picture. Just erase everything here. So parallel transport, or let me call it, I'll draw it again, otherwise it'll be awesome. So, kind of remarkable. Suppose you have a two-dimensional quantum field theory. So Aaron talked about two-dimensional topological quantum field theories. These are functors from two-dimensional cobordisms to vector spaces. But it's clear that eventually we might want to equip these cobordisms with extra structure, in particular with a conformance structure, for instance, or with extra maps and extra spaces, whatever. And so let me maybe write 2COB S for some category of two cobordisms with certain structure on it. And you'd say a two-dimensional quantum field theory is a representation of that cobordism category. Oh. So the remarkable thing is, so it's in general, it's quite hard to actually construct such functors. But it becomes easier if one applies local state sum models. So in the topological case, that's what Aaron mentioned. So you have that surface here, that cobordism, you know, going from this circle to this circle, maybe with some genus here. Then it's a theorem going back to Fukuma, Hosono, Kawai, and later generalized to lots of different cases by other people. that you do get such a functor from just topological two covariances by doing that precisely analogous prescription. So you choose a dual triangulation of your manifold. I'll just sketch it like this. You sort of fatten these edges of your triangulation. Now you don't label it by morphisms in some two group or something. You label it by a vector space, another vector space, another vector space. And your morphism in between will be a morphism of vector spaces satisfying the tetrahedron equation and everything. So it will be labeled by an associative algebra. And actually, if you go through this procedure for the case that T is just a special ambidextrous adjunction, you'll find there'll be triangles of this sort and triangles of the other sort that sort of have one input and two outputs, and which encode precisely the co-product structure on that algebra A, such and certain compatibility there will ensure a Frobenius condition. So what I want to say is one very helpful construction for obtaining two-dimensional quantum field theories looks formally very similar to the formalism by which one computes surface autonomy of gerbs. And so what's going on here? Right. So originally I intended to say lots of things about conformal field theory and lots of theorems. And then John sort of said, I shouldn't really talk about things that I don't have the time to explain in an amount of detail that everybody will be able to follow. So instead of just sort of giving an overview of lots of sophisticated topics, I thought I'd just illuminate one particular small aspect of the answer to this why, which is, I think, quite nice, entertaining. It will be will not lead to anything profoundly new, which you might not have seen before, but it will indicate how I might proceed to fully answer this. So in order to do this, I will do the following. I will think a little bit about what quantization is. So the idea is that what should relate these two pictures in the end is, of course, the following. I'm about to get to the title, yeah. Yeah, it will be a short talk, so it's good if we wait for the title a while. Yeah. Yeah, I have to motivate. The title doesn't make any sense without this introduction. So so let's see what's going on. Usually, the situation that makes you want to consider quantum field theories in the first place is that you have some theory of strings in this case. So you have maps from, say, the circle into some target space, into some manifold, which you usually want to identify as space-time. And you say, okay, if that string propagates in space-time, so think of this entire picture you're sitting in some space X, right, being embedded into something, you want to associate something to it. In the simplest case, just a complex number. You do this for a billion gerbs, and all this gives you is in the end a complex number, which you call... No, I don't mean this. So then there is a certain crank one can turn to obtain from such an assignment of such complex numbers to embedded surfaces this QFT which lives on abstract surfaces. That's the quantization procedure. So somehow we probably need to understand what's going on here. And quantization,
what's next? So maybe I should give the title now. So quantization consists of two parts. You have some classical system. I mean, you have some assignment of some numbers to something like this. And you want to do two things with it. You want to compute something you call the space of states, and you want to compute something you call the propagator. And the last thing is hard. The first thing is a rather nice interpretation. So what I want to talk about is how to take sections, spaces of sections, of two vector bundles. Because it turns out that
the data that is assigned here can be thought of as coming from or encoding spaces of states, which are nothing but spaces of sections of a two-vector bundle. And I will follow the same sort of strategy that I did yesterday. I'll first talk about things we know very well, namely just ordinary vector bundles and the ordinary spaces of sections. I will formulate that nicely. So I will regard a vector bundle as a smooth Anna functor the way I did before and tell you what the space of sections is. And in a way that is not arrow theoretic. And then I categorify this. Just a tiny bit of it, in fact. But it's sort of fun, I think. And one does see the first glimpse of how from this structure one does obtain such a structure. Just a little impression. So, as I said, there won't be any deep theorem here or anything, but just some maybe entertaining, I hope, some entertaining structure. But, of course, the point is that sort of one indicates the structure which one should further follow to find, and one can further follow to find. Deeper statement, but not today, I guess. So I have this. When I thought about giving this talk, I tried to understand in which order I would have to present the results, or the not the results maybe, but the content. And I realized somehow I had problems organizing them in a linear order. And then I realized the reason for that was that the situation here is. It's three-dimensional, so I like to draw a certain cube to you on the board, which is something like the table of contents of what I might say. Might be a little vague to those who have never seen anything related to physics, but I'd like to draw it anyway. I think it's a nice cube. So I think what's going on is this here, or what we should be looking for. We have a parallel transport of this sort, which allows us to associate numbers or group elements or linear maps to paths embedded in some space. Say a one functor, precisely of the simple sort that we started talking about yesterday. And you can do several things to it. You can, in particular, how do I draw this? You can try to categorify it. Right, that's what I talked about. We get a parallel transport two functor. Let me just write transport two functor. You can also, that was the main point actually. You can also do something to this functor which we called locally trivializing it, which produces an Anna functor for you. So let me draw this in this direction maybe. And it gives you something I call, it gives you something you might call descent data or whatever. Let me call it the differential co-cycle, okay? Where the differential indicates that we have a connection in the game, and co-cycle indicates that we have locally trivialized something. So this cube is going to be a little smashed, it seems. You can do the same thing here and get a two co-cycle, as I at least indicated at the end of my talk. And as I've also tried to make plausible, or to mention at least, is that, of course, down here, we also have a categorification process. So this is not supposed to be some, precise diagram, but heuristically, that's something that commutes. You can proceed this way. So that was what we had last time. And now it seems what we need. We don't have this yet, but it seems what we need is we need to have a way to get from some parallel transport to something defined on abstract manifolds, which defines the quantum theory, whatever that would mean. If you don't know what it means, it means taking sections. That's what we should do. So there's another arrow here, which is the one which is a little harder to understand. It's quantization. And I'm trying to give this somewhat vague idea a rather precise meaning, at least Yeah. So the resulting thing here that quantum field theory, I'd like to call a propagator. The idea is that it tells you, given a state of an incoming string, what happens to it is it propagates along, well, along its world sheet, as it said, right? Sort of a time evolution. So anyway, it's just a name. So we get another functor here, which I'd like to call the propagator, one functor. So we can think about this. This is well known, of course, to physicists at least, what this should be. So we can try to formulate this nicely here, this arrow, and then try to push it along this entire square. So when we have this thing here, which would correspond to this global functor here, right? Sort of. We might like to obtain from it the picture that Aaron has advertised. We might like to obtain a state sum model from it, where we obtain that functor from local data. So we might want to go down here.
Was that vertical arrow something like localizing in the sense of giving a local description the words categorify and quantify is a very exciting verb.
All right, so.
Third process, I was wondering if there's anything to do with that.
Yeah, I used to think of it as local trivialization.
Okay.
I mean, it's a familiar term for fiber bundles, and as I try to indicate, that directly generalizes to these cases. So so something globally defined is very difficult globally, but it's not just any arbitrary, very complicated global thing. We know, at least if we look at small enough neighborhoods of something, it looks nice. There we can understand it. I mean, that's how physics works. Physicists are dumb. They can't understand global things, and they don't, usually. So they understand all these local things very well. And then after they understood that enough, some mathematician comes along and just tells them, oh, you have to just glue it this and that way, and then you get all kinds of more interesting things. That's how it usually works. So, yeah, so from the physics perspective, it usually goes this way. Right? We have lots of local data. And then some mathematician comes along, invents one single symbol, and then that sort of summarizes 50 papers of physics. Okay. So we have this propagation one functor. We may locally trivialize it. Now that's a little problem because you'll never see this discussed in textbooks explicitly. It appears when you compute what's called, what is it called actually? partition functions for fermions with anti-commuting boundary conditions. So there's something here which is rarely discussed because it's sort of too trivial. It just amounts to saying, okay, if you compute the parallel transport over a circle, you might have to insert a transition function here or there. Okay, people rarely mention it, and it's not what we're interested in. We want to find the categorification here. So there should be something sitting here, which is precisely a two-dimensional QFT. Which is both the categorification of the notion of time evolution in quantum mechanics. It doesn't tell you how to propagate a particle from here to there, but it tells you how to propagate a string from here to there. But should at the same time be the quantization of the corresponding transport two functor. Can we read this? And that's, of course, exactly what happens. If you've ever heard about anything of strings, you'll know that there's a gerb in the game, the so-called Kalbra-Mohr field. And it is precisely that thing which tells you which numbers to associate such that when you turn that funny crank, you get the quantum field theory, the conformal field theory of your strings. So let me just complete this square. So the most important point that what Aaron Lauder was talking about, if we can take this two-dimensional QFT, this functor, and locally trivialize it in the sense that we try to obtain a state sum model from it, which allows us to compute the full thing by just doing things locally and gluing. So down here we have state sum model, which is a fancy name for something that is precisely this picture, which we don't really understand quite well. So we have an arrow here, and then you can fill in all these other arrows. This is supposed to be the quantization of the two cocycle and so on. So that's the three-dimensional table of contents that lies behind this talk here. Yeah. Oh, I'm not, you're thinking about conformal field theory now?
Yes.
No, I'm, yeah. So that was my original intention to really talk about conformal field theory here. But as I said, I...
Just say one word. You have to consider holomorphic parts? Or you
no, I consider full CFTs, not just color ones, no. You can, I mean, that's the motivation. So my current boss is doing two-dimensional full conformal field theory, and this is sort of the exercise we're trying to understand, right? So this is actually very useful. He understands, I mean, Christoph Schweiger, that is. They understand this part very well, much better even than parts of this, so it was even possible to, for instance, from knowing how this works on unoriented worship, this was joint work with Konrad Waldorf, to guess how this Dirac polynomy should work for unorientable even world sheets. So there's we're trying to understand why this works so well. Okay, so this was lots of fancy terminology which might not mean anything to you, and it doesn't matter. Now I'm going to speak about something completely elementary, and all I'm going to do is formulate it in its natural language, hopefully. So if you don't know anything about quantization of the ordinary particles, there's only one thing you need to know for this talk. What quantization means, it means this. We're given a space X and a vector bundle, a Hermitian vector bundle, maybe on a Riemannian space, but never mind at the moment. So there's a vector bundle, I call it V, okay, for vector bundle. And, sorry, I need to put this here maybe. And this vector bundle R should have a connection. So from this data, you cook up two things, and that's the quantization set. You compute the space of states, the space of sections, just ordinary, you know, sections of a vector bundle. You compute this, or you just write it down, and you call it H. That's the trick for Hilbert space. You know, if you have this extra structure around, you equip this with the structure of a Hilbert space. The point is, you call this the space of states, and imagine that tells you something about states of particles. But that's not important here. The important thing is you take the space of sections, and I just call it gamma V. You might have to, in the end, you know, include more technical conditions like square integrability. It doesn't matter for my purposes here, so I'm, you know, way off from these technical details here. So, that's sort of on the object level what you do. There's also a morphism aspect of this. From the connection of the bundle, you cook up something, some morphism from H to H. That's precisely the propagator. So for each real number, regarded as an element in one-dimensional Riemannian cobordisms even, you want to have one such linear map from H to H. So just to establish some terminology, this is usually here called the kinematics of your system. This is the dynamics. This is, of course, what we're interested in the end, but this is hard, subtle. So doing this requires things like path integrals and stuff, which is really sophisticated. I can talk about it, but I won't. But this is easy, or at least we try to make it easy. Yes? Oh, sorry, I should... So it's this U is supposed to be a functor. I'll write it down below. Oh, above maybe. So U is a functor from one-dimensional Riemannian cobordisms. So it's the decategorified version of this here. Suppose you just have... Yeah, okay. So right. So where should I do this here? So the point is, the decategorification of that picture below is just that's a surface. So here's a one-dimensional space. And I equip it with the Riemannian structure, so it just has a length. So what I mean is, one cob with the Riemannian structure, I mean, it's just the category sigma r, the additive group of real numbers, right? Which I always write this sigma to emphasize that it's regarded as a category. So, okay. It's just sigma r. But we should really be thinking in terms of this, because that's what generalizes. In high dimensions, we have two-dimensional cobordisms with possibly conformal structure or maybe even Riemannian structure or whatever. So U is supposed to be a functor from parameter space to Hilbert spaces, but in this case, just to endomorphisms of H, okay? Well, in general, of course, to vect. the arrow right here. Thanks. And this is the, so we call, yeah, so that's that functor evaluated on one morphism of one dimensional remaining covariance. Is that okay? Yeah, so right, so if you've seen this, how this works, this H is actually given by, this thing is actually the operator obtained by exponentiating I times T times nabla square. That's the covariant Laplace operator obtained from the connection here. Sorry, can you say that again?
Schrodinger's equation.
Schrodinger's equation. Yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, it's the propagator. This is the Hamiltonian here. But never mind, we can't understand this here. It's too hard for our purposes. But the point is, so I was very much inspired by this by Bruce Barzit and Simon Willerton, who told me that this is the right way to think about it. This really goes back to Dan Fried, who said, actually there's no Descartes, how do you say this show to me here? It's really there should be an abstract principle by which both sides actually unify to one thing. It should be something like push forward to a point, but I just understand it on the left side. So I'm just going to talk about the left side. But the idea is it should really be one thing there. Okay. So now for something a little more concrete, but still very elementary, just to entertain you a little. I want to tell you all what a section of a vector bundle is. Because I guess you don't know yet. I know you know, but let's think about it in a certain helpful way. Sections of vector bundle. So, I mean, the main point is I don't want to think of a vector bundle as the total space of the projection. I mean, we've went through all these 3 hours of Russian seminar yesterday to convince us that a vector bundle is a transport functor from something, some notion of paths and x to vector spaces, which is locally trivializable and smooth. Now, I'll pull one trick. Even if this is not too hard for me, I don't really want to see, as I said here, connections are too hard at the moment. So I just really want to see the vector bundle without its connection. So what I just do is I say, okay, I just define this functor on constant paths. So I just take my path category. You know, that was the point here. I wrote specific labels there, but I can really use just almost anything I want. So I take the discrete category over X, thought of as the category of paths that don't move at all. Then, if you just go through this general nonsense that I've talked about, you see this is precisely this, you know, the same results that we had before. It's just a vector bundle now, if we require it to be locally trivializable and smooth without a connection. So that's what I'm going to think about. But, you know, the point is think of it as transport functors. So what is a section? Let's see, what could we do? Let's consider the category of constant paths in a space that contains just a single point. Okay? So that's the category with a single object and a single morphism. And we have a canonical morphism here, of course, from that category to the point. And I should call it P. So let's assume I have a functor as a vector bundle on the point, so just a vector space. Let's say let me call this one point. It's a morphism from the discrete category of the point to vect. It's the tensor unit, and it's the tensor unit in the category of all these functors. No, that's, what should I call it? Oh, okay. Well, it's the tensor one. Is that fine? I want it to act like this, just to be sure that we're talking about the same thing. I want it to send the point to the complex. So I'm working on the complex numbers now, for just to be specific. I. Like this? Oh, big I. But the multiplicative, and then okay.
I see now you're all interested, and now it's about formalism.
Yeah,
right. So I'm just playing a very simple trick. So I'm really doing an exercise in, I don't know how you call this in abstract terms, maybe just reformulating things in a nice way. But the claim is, wait for a while, it will pay off. There's a nice story here. So we have this thing, and what we can do is, of course, we can use P to postcompose I and pull I back to X, right? So we can consider the functor, how should I call this now? So this was I point, maybe. So we get the functor IX, which is just, by definition now, of my statement, it's just a pullback along P of I on the point, which is a functor which sends any point in X to the single point in the point, and sends that to vect by simply sending any point here all the way to C. So it's the trivial one-dimensional rank one vector bundle on X, right? This thing. Okay? So let's look at what a morphism from IX to transfer V would be. I hope that's not boring you too much, but since it's the last talk, maybe it's good to be, you know, relax a little. So let's just look at what is HOM P star, well, HOM IX to transport V. We call these are two functors now, transport functors on our little silly path category here. And what is a homomorphic, what is an element in there? Well, it's a natural transformation E that sends a point in X to the image of that point under IX, which is just that canonical one-dimensional vector space, and to the image, sorry, into a morphism which has a target, the image of that point under transport V, which is the fiber of the vector bundle over X. Okay, and this I call EX. So you know, an element in here, something that assigns to each point a morphism from C into that vector space. So just a vector in here. So that's just over each point, a vector and the fiber over that point. So that's a section. Okay, and I require all this to live in that category of smooth anti-functors. So it's a smooth section, if you like, but it doesn't matter for the moment. So HOM I, that's gamma V. Okay. So what is gamma V? Well, gamma V is the space of homomorphisms from the trivial functor over the point to gamma V, okay? Yeah, I'll do it. So I might have time to do this locally on the tower. So as I said, we require all this to live in a smooth, locally trivializable thing. But it should be obvious how to do it, and it's not really, you know, it's important to understand the point here. So we can just, if you like, just imagine everything to be discrete. We just did the same point. I'm just trying to establish the arrow theory. You can interpret it wherever you want then. Right? So what's homomorphisms from I on the point into that? Oh, okay, I can't write this way. So we need the functor here. Okay, that's what I mean. Which associates the point to gamma V, okay? Is that right? Because a natural transformation here has to send the single point of point to a morphism from C to some vector space, and that's supposed to be the vector space gamma V, so it's like this. So anyway, what I wanted to say is this thing here is apparently the right adjoint. Right adjoint of the pullback applied to transport V. I call it Q because that's our quantization morphism. It takes a functor on X and sends it to a vector space, namely a space of sections. So that's the way I like to think about it here. For us, you know, the quantization on the object level, what we call the claim is that essentially, it should be the same on the morphism level, but that's too hard at the moment. Quantization is pushed forward of our vector bundles forward to a point, taking the space of sections. And right, so P was a functor from
star, sorry, was a function. Maybe I should emphasize this. So recall, this was. Yeah, just a second. So that's important. I point a P star, the pullback form to transfer V. So we have functors from paths on the point to vector spaces. And P star was a functor that by pullback sent this to functors from paths in X to vector spaces. Okay? And now Q apparently takes the functor.
Well,
it's going back the other way.
Yeah,
okay. So Q goes this way. Okay, let me say that again. So this entire space is the vector space gamma V. And I'm just rewriting gamma V is the space of morphisms from C into gamma V, or it's isomorphic to it, right? Okay? And this again is the same as functors on points with values in C and in gamma V and natural transformations between these. So I write down another commuting diagram or something, or
no,
is that clear?
Vector
bundles, okay.
That's the category of vector space, vector bundles
over. Oh, point, yeah, right.
And then the right one is the category of vector bundles over X.
Okay,
so
thanks.
Q is assigning to any vector bundle on X, vector space, vector bundle.
Thanks, thanks. Yeah. I want to see it. Yeah, but it, yeah. So it's P lower star, yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm calling it Q to remind us that this is supposed to be what I mean by quantization, okay? For our purpose. Yeah, it's just a funny reformulation of standard things, yeah. But well, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. You should, if you're interested in it, look at the papers by Fried and Hopkins. They are using this to a great extent for transformation theory, really interpreting the whole thing as pushing forward, things forward to points. Yeah, but that's what it is, yeah.
Well, that's a different,
okay, so next I've noted on saying that what that all means in local data. But maybe I should skip this. How long? Yeah, I'll categorify. Yeah, that's right. okay, so plan B. Part B of the plan, maybe. So let's categorify. Right, I want to get to the point to make you all believe that you understand what a D-brain is for a string. So I'm claiming D-brains are parts of the data that appear if we categorify this, and it's part of the data of a section of a durb over open string. So let's see if we can understand this simple term. So plan B, categorify. So we need two things. We need to understand what is a two-vector bundle. So the first thing we need is understand or find, pick two-vector bundles, two-vector spaces. Right? We need to understand the what we might use as the codomain here for a two-vector bundle. So what's a two-vector space? Well, what's a vector space? I can think of it this way. Let me work over the complex numbers just for definiteness. So category of vector space of C is nothing else but sort of the modules of C, right? It's a module category. So from that point of view, I am inclined to say that given a monoidal category C, categorifying this monoid of complex numbers, which in applications you want to be well behaved, usually abelian, but doesn't matter for my current purposes. Then I say, okay, C linear spaces are C module categories, meaning categories with a left C action. So I say, okay, two vect C, by definition, C modules. So that means a thing in here is a category n, such that there's a functor from c times n to n, which behaves like a left action, has the action property up to something. Okay, so sounds maybe strange. Let me give you lots of examples. So first of all, we're all familiar from yesterday with the vector spaces defined by Alice Aquinas and John Bice. They were categories internal to vector spaces. Let's think about this for a second. What does it mean? It means really that both the collection of objects and the collection of morphisms is a C module, right? And all morphisms, like source and target in the category, are C module morphisms. So I can formulate it this way. If I take that monoidal category to be the discrete category over the complex numbers, just complex numbers of objects and identity morphisms, the corresponding C modules are by Aquinas two vector spaces in C. I'm not going to use this example, but I think it's good to see how it fits in that notion to reassure us that we are on the right track. I mean, that this notion of two vector space is good. The more interesting thing, which I shall talk about, so in the CFC context, one will have to use really sophisticated C here, namely modular tensor categories. But for my purposes, since it's sort of all topological I'm doing here, I'm just using vector itself as C, right? It's a monoidal category. And Kapranov-Vygotsky two vector spaces are an example for this. So I'm not sure, should this be? Yeah, we had them in some talk before, right? So Kapranov-Vygotsky two vector spaces, in one of there are various variations, but one of which is easy to understand is just the disjoint union of overall integers of the category vect to the power. So it's just, you know, tuples of n vector spaces and tuples of n morphisms between them. So so that's what Kapranov-Vygotsky called a two vector space. And you see the point is it sits inside vect mod, right? Because all these guys here are left vect modules, and that they have a left vect action, which simply amounts to tensoring a tuple of n vector spaces by fixed vector space. Okay. So the interesting thing is, let's maybe reformulate this slightly once again, and notice that, maybe put it this way, that vect n is nothing but the category of modules for the algebra Cn. I take n copies of C, put an algebra structure on that just by component-wise composition, then a module for this is just n copies of the C module, which is just precisely what this is about here. So this is a general fact which shall be important. See, left vector categories often come to us as categories of modules of ordinary algebras. And in fact, can I fit this in here? In fact, we have the following important inclusion. We see that Kapranov-Vygotsky two-vector spaces really fit inside the category of all bimodules in vect. You can regard a morphism in here. It's an n times n matrix with entries of vector spaces. That's really a Cn times Cm bimodule. So there's a canonical embedding in here. And the important point is that bimodules embed into vect module categories. How does it work? You take the bimodules of the bicategory or two category, just strictified, whose objects are algebras in vect in the sense, so just ordinary algebras, whose morphisms are AB bimodules, and whose two morphisms are bimodule homomorphisms. I guess I call them phi something, rho phi. So how do you interpret this? That was one of my remarks to Arne's last talk. So whenever we encounter this situation, we're already, in a way, talking about two vector spaces, because this is just, since this really embeds in here, right? It's really, we should think of A as really being the category of its modules. Okay? And similarly for B. And each bimodule here gives us a functor which is vect linear by taking any A module here, tensoring it over A with that given bimodule. Same here. And then you can check that from that bimodal homomorphism, just because everything happens on the left of whatever we had, or on the right of whatever we had here, you just, I don't know how to write this, or write like maybe this, you just insert the phi here and you get a natural transformation between these functors, and everything is vect linear. So for my purposes, I sort of want to think of the two vector spaces that I'm using as being vect modular categories, but all of them are too harsh for me. So I, you know, that's what always happens. This is in general too harsh for me, so I inject things into it and just look at it locally in a way. So I'm going to use BIM as my codomain and think of it as too much. So the motivation for this is that actually in the case of conformal field theory, rational conformal field theory, this is actually an Uppsala, where we have special conditions here, modularity and everything. There's actually, I'm not quite sure. This is essentially surjective on objects in these cases, so that we really can think of every modular tensor category module, if it's semi-simple and well-behaved, as coming from an algebra. That's the motivation for doing this. Okay. So then we know what globally, for my purpose at least, that a two-vector bundle would be. In this sense, you may just use any other two-vector space, but at the moment it's something that sends, some notion of two paths in X, as we had before, two bimodules in this sense. And I will want to think of this two-vector bundle as being an associated two-vector bundle, associated to a principal bundle. So what I want to do is, I want to say that locally, transitions of the fiber look like transitions in a principal bundle. So I want to say there's some two group, and I shift it again. And now this isn't, I mean, inclusion isn't quite the right word, even though it might be one. But I can now represent that two group on two vector spaces. And that's precisely, I mean, if you just forget all this twos, these twos here, that's what an associated vector bundle, an ordinary vector bundle, would be in this formalism, right? You just use this general square there and insert a representation of some group for I.
So you mean that if you have that vertical arrow, that's just a vector bundle or a vector bundle, but it factors.
Yeah, so I now require that locally. So I require that I have an epi here, right? I have this, thing here. And I require that I can complete this thing by inserting something in the strict of, as you say, through that principal transport here, which is called TRIF, such that at least up to isomorphism here. Okay? Up to equivalence. Yes? Oh, sorry, not to a fixed bimodal. This is my notation. Yeah, Simon will maybe. So this is a category of bimodals. It looks like this. Yeah, Simon keeps pointing out to me that this is bad notation. It's a category whose name is, you know, given by its one morphisms, which is.
I'm just trying to understand what this is.
Okay. It's going to. Yeah, you might have seen these diagrams in the. Right. So. Well, let's see what it does. It takes an object in here, which is a point in X. It sends it to an object in here, which is an algebra. An algebra, AX. Oh, no. Okay, see, what I'm trying to point out is Kaplan and Vygotsky two vector spaces are that subcategory of bimodules where all these algebras are of the form CN. So here we'd have. At the moment I haven't chosen anything. I'm just. Yeah, but just in a second I will choose a very simple algebra to get a very simple example. So you might have. I don't know if you've seen work by Stolz and Teichner on elliptic homology. They consider precisely this, and their algebra is algebra of periodic operators of an affine Lie group. So you want to do sophisticated stuff with this at the moment. But one of my points will be let's just choose this to be the algebra of complex numbers over itself. We get a line bundle job from it, something very simple, just from the standard formalism, and we'll take sections and we see the deep brains. That will be just my punchline. It will be all very elementary, and I'm already running out of time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just sneak in this. So that's n gamma prime. Okay, so so I have 5 more minutes, is that right? Or am I already over time? Okay, so then let me get to the punchline. So there are for every strict tool, there's a canonical rep on bimodules, which simply takes the single point here, and for every rep of I won't make it, I guess. I have to. So there's a fact which I can't explain now. For every rep of an ordinary group on vector spaces, we get an induced rep of the strict two group, which has this as a group of morphisms, which sends a single point to the algebra generated by the image of rho. And we get canonical stuff associated here. And okay, so maybe I stop drawing things and just say the last thing in words, so it took me longer than I thought. So, okay, what we can do is we choose the two group to be shifted U1, just U1 of morphisms, just a single object. There's a canonical rep of this on bimodules, which is very trivial, just since the point to the algebra C over itself sends all morphisms to the object C regarded as a bimodule over itself and just associates a complex number here, namely precisely the complex number of coming from this element in U1. Then if you use this row in here, do this stuff, you get what is called an abelian bundle gerb. Then you compute a space of sections by pushing it forward to a point, and you find that you get something that, okay, I can't explain this. Yeah, you get a two vector space, and it. All right, we have to look at all the morphisms from it. So we pull back something trivial on. Yeah, actually we don't work with the point anymore. So yeah, sorry. So we take a little string instead, an open string, and that replaces the point. We pull a trivial function from there back to the full space. We then push forward by taking the adjoint. And we'll find that the space of homomorphisms from, you know, the trivial thing into this is over each point a gerb module. One, here another gerb module two, where a gerb module is something like a generalized trivialization of a line two bundle, if you like. The point being that gerb modules, whatever they are, which I can't explain, are precisely what physicists call a D brain with a chain Payton, I guess, or Chen Payton or whatever, Chen Payton bundle over it. So it's a twisted bundle, if you know what that is. And there will be a funny kind of gerb module, gerb module associated to this of a kind which I'm not quite sure that I've seen it before. Maybe, yeah. Okay, so there will be the stuff associated. All I wanted to point out is, if you want to take that message home, what is the D-brain? What is the D-brain? So it's the data associated by a section of a line two bundle to the endpoints of a string. So a categorified state of a particle. Right? So that open string has a state, which requires that on an endpoint there is some big structure which has all these funny names.